Welcome to Changing the Narrative. I'm Dina Eccles, and my intention with these podcasts is to give you a glimpse into the strength of the human spirit in all of its hardships and in all of its victories. My hope is to entice you to wonder and explore diversity, not fear it, and to accept and support the best of humanity and not squander it. My guest today is someone I've grown to respect. As her country was and remains invaded, she took it upon herself to speak of her people and her homeland with courage and love. And I'm honored to have her speaking to us today. Natalka Okalenko was born in Kyiv, Ukraine, in a family of railway workers and engineers. She graduated from Kyiv State University and worked to promote clean energy and international cooperation in Europe. She currently lives in Madison and is an active member of the local Ukrainian community. So welcome, Natalka.
Hi, Dina. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure when I get to hear you speak and to be in community with you. So let's begin with your life in Ukraine. I think a lot of people, we hear Ukraine, and I don't think people really fully understand the culture.
Yeah. So I think the main thing to know about Ukraine is that Ukraine is very large, very diverse, it's comprised of all kinds of terrain. We have mountains, we have sea, we have steppes, which is the same as prairies. We have large cities and small villages, and all kinds of people live in Ukraine. Also very diverse. We have lots of Muslims, lots of Jews, lots of people of all sorts. You know, Crimea's native population of Crimean Tatars, and there are people who speak Hungarian and Slovak in the west of Ukraine. There is, you know, heavy Polish influence in the west of Ukraine. There's lots of Russian speaking in the east of Ukraine. But what unites all of Ukrainians is the love of Ukraine and the love of living like this as a community of many, many different kinds of people, and a strong sense of community and independence as a nation.
Right, and that's what I've glimpsed as I've kind of tried to learn myself. It's so beautiful to see that. I mean, this is what the aspiration is. You know, I know here in the United States, the aspiration is to allow so many diverse people to be together, and that thing of independence, wanting to remain, having that relationship and respect for Ukraine, and wanting your independence. So, what has it been like for you to witness the invasion over the last few years? And
So another thing I wanted to mention is that before the invasion in 2014, I was certain that Ukraine and Kyiv in particular was going to be the new popular, amazing tourist destination in Europe. Because Kyiv is like the Paris of Eastern Europe. Kyiv is beautiful and large, and has very rich and ancient history, as well as very vibrant modern life. So when the Ukrainian people in their mass, in millions, started an uprising against the corrupt government of Viktor Yanukovych in 2013, that flowed into a revolution of dignity in the winter of 2014, we were very hopeful, and I was very, very proud of Ukrainians who, all ages and all social strata, people stood up together and fought against the illegal and corrupt government, and they ousted the corrupt president. But then Russia, that always has its sights on Ukraine's resources and hates the idea of Ukraine's independence, they invaded Crimea, which the world silently watched without doing much about it, in eastern Ukraine. And so that war became a part of daily life in Ukraine. And I went to visit my parents with my kids many times during those 10 years between then and now. And life was mostly seemed like a normal, peaceful life of any European country, except there were veterans and soldiers, and they're a very active volunteer lifestyle had sprung with so many people voluntarily involved in volunteering, and people, you know, paying forward at cafes and restaurants for each other and for veterans. It had transformed the society into one of beautiful defiance and unity. But then when 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, the Western intelligence started warning us about the amassing of Russian troops on our borders, we all grew increasingly uneasy and worried and scared. And that was an extremely scary time, which, as everybody probably knows, finally came to a point in February 2022 when they actually invaded and started with bombing Kyiv, just like the Nazis did back in 1941. They also started bombing Kyiv at 4 a.m., and this is what the Russians did, too. So that was shocking and predictable and foreseeable, and yet we were not prepared. But what it led to was the Ukrainians all over the world, and especially inside Ukraine, felt even more united than ever. And everybody went to volunteer for the army, or, you know, people like us here in the diaspora in the U.S., in the United States, we had to do something. So we started doing our little part in resistance to this war.
Yeah, your little part is a lot of a part. I've been looking at your Facebook page, and I strongly recommend to people that they do, Friends of Ukraine Madison, where you just have so many different activities and educational things, keeping everyone current on what's happening there. And I know protecting your cultural heritage. I mean, I can hear it in your voice when you speak. You know, there's such a strength and a love. And it seems like that is very much a part of being Ukrainian. So can you speak a little bit about the different things that are happening to protect cultural heritage, inside and outside?
Thank you for asking this. This is a very, very important question. Because one thing that Russia has done for centuries, and they're still doing it now, the first thing that they focus is the national identity, language, and culture. They... during this latest round of the war, they have destroyed libraries, schools, right after the Russian invasion of the Crimea many years ago now, 12, 13. The first thing that they did was close the Ukrainian library in Moscow and imprison its director. And when they marched into another Ukrainian town or village, they destroyed the library and the school and the hospital. I think that this idea that territorial concession to Putin will somehow end the war, I hope that people will forget about this idea, because it unfortunately is very untrue. They have enough territory as it is. They are the largest land mass country in the world already. They don't need Ukrainian land. They are obsessed with the idea of ending Ukraine's independence and autonomy as a nation, as a country. So protecting museums and libraries and books has become paramount to Ukrainians. Since the first days of this current war or full-scale invasion, you can see pictures of monuments in Ukrainian cities wrapped in sandbags and protective structures. And the precious historical artifacts that have not yet been stolen by Russians, they're being protected and hidden. And so I think that the mission of those of us who live outside of Ukraine is to keep the word alive, to make sure people in other countries know what actually is happening. And Ukraine is a thriving, independent, unique culture that does not deserve to be destroyed by its neighbor or oppressed. And this has been happening for centuries, like I said. In the 1930s, the Soviet government, the Stalin's government, initiated a man-made famine known as Holodomor that resulted in millions of Ukrainians dead. They initiated purges that targeted Ukrainian intellectuals, artists, political leaders, and just ordinary citizens, and poets and writers writing in Ukrainian. Almost all of them were killed in the Gulag or in Stalin's prisons. And then in the 30s, the Great Purge devastated Ukraine's every layer of society. So it is a miracle and a testament to just how passionate Ukrainians are about their culture that, you know, we're still thriving. There's a thriving new Ukrainian music and literature and movies, and even during the war, all these things are still going on. People are still creating. People are still speaking the language, and I would like the American people to consider joining us in some of our events, like, for example, our annual Ukrainian Fest that happens in late August, around the time when Ukraine celebrates its Independence Day. And we have a lot of food that we make from scratch and wonderful Ukrainian music and games for children.
And can you, so this is late in August and in Madison?
Yes. Yes, so Madison, let me see, it's the 17th of August, I think.
Great.
But please consult our Facebook page or our website, Friends of Ukraine Madison.
Okay.
For more details.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of that food that'll be there. I always love to, I always love to talk about food. I think it's definitely helps us understand one another.
Yeah, I think that most people have heard about borscht or borscht, as it's spelled here sometimes, which is a very, very beloved traditional Ukrainian soup that features beets and tomatoes prominently, so it's sweet and sour and so delicious. And I eat it a lot because my mother lives with me, and I'm very, very happy because she eats all this Ukrainian food. I remember sharing a train car with an older Ukrainian lady one day who lived in a village, and she told me that her husband expects fresh borscht made for him every single day. That's how important.
Okay. Kind of like I eat oatmeal.
Right. And she said, sometimes I reuse the borscht from yesterday, but I tell him it's brand new and he's happy.
That's great.
Also, of course, vareniki, which is known under its Polish name of pierogi here, is very, very popular. We love them stuffed with potatoes and onions, or with meat, but of course the most cherished Ukrainian kind of vareniki is those with cherries. Hard cherries with sugar. Oh my gosh, it's the best one.
My mouth's watering. Keep going.
Yeah. Don't forget to put sour cream on everything, and then you're truly
right.
At least I do.
Mm.
Yeah, and we will have little ham pies and salad. So things that we love to eat, we also like to share with our community and our guests.
Yeah, that is the beauty of community, coming together. Everybody knows by now, I'm half Italian, and the manja mentality, you know, eating together, it's a big deal. It's important. Celebrating.
That's definitely, yeah.
Yeah, celebrating with food. So good. We'll look forward to that sometime in around August 17th down in Madison, and people should check it out and help celebrate Ukraine and the beautiful cultural heritage of the people there, and all now all over the world.
Ukrainians, I agree with you, just like Italians, they're very focused on food. I actually remember there is an expression, soup-centric. That's what Ukrainians are, we're soup-centric. There has to be soup all the time, every day. You know, wherever you are, in a school, in a refugee settlement, or at the front lines, soup is very, very important.
Hmm. I'll remember that when you come visit me.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I've heard much about the Ukrainian bread being like the breadbasket, being the place where so much great food is raised and cultivated. I'm sure with all the bombing and stuff, this is really a hard time for farmers there.
The amount of landmines that are in the Ukrainian soil after 3 years of this war is incredible. It's the highest it's ever been in history. And just like you said, Ukraine is known as the breadbasket of Europe and maybe even of the world, and for good reason. Ukraine feeds much of Africa and Asian countries. Ukrainian grain is extremely important to hunger prevention efforts globally. So what Russians are doing in destroying the agriculture and poisoning the land and stealing the grain and killing people who work in the land is one of their many, many war crimes, and one that has significant global consequences.
Right.
So the world needs to pay attention to this. And the United Nations, I would like to see more decisive actions and more support to Ukraine from the international community.
Right. This seems to be a real time for human beings to really stand up. I mean, you know, the United Nations began after World War II. And I think there were really wonderful and high priority set, wonderful understanding shared of how we could be. And it really, you know, the whole point was to eliminate this thing of invading fellow peaceful countries for no reason. I mean, you know, the ideals are incredible, but they're being undermined by, I don't know, greed. Greed is one thing. The fear of, as you said, the fear of the independent nature of people. I mean, we're watching it here. It's happening. It's slipping away. If we're not careful, at least the pressure is being put on. Yeah, so I feel like this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on to talk about Ukraine, because we need to be, that thing needs to be awakened in us again, that all of our independence is important, that all of our, you know, shared learnings are important, you know, and so, yeah, this is the
Ukraine,
moment.
Ukraine has existed in this crossroads of civilizations and cultures between the Eastern and the Western world, between Greeks and Scandinavians for millennium or longer. And while we are people of the world and of the trade and of the food, we also want to survive as our own nation.
Right.
That, like I said before, includes in itself people who speak Tatar and Yiddish and German and Russian and Ukrainian and Hungarian and so on. I think Ukraine could serve as a beautiful example of very different people living together and building something together instead of going to war all the time, like, sadly, our next-door neighbor country. Because that's what they've done this for centuries. They started right after the Soviet Union fell apart, they immediately started planning to invade their former colonies back. That's why the Baltic countries are so worried.
Right.
Georgia and Moldova have already seen violent incursions and war from Russia. Ukraine, obviously, is going through a very hot phase right now. But that's why the much maligned NATO was necessary and why so many Eastern European countries ran to join it in the 90s. It wasn't because they wanted to threaten Russia. It was the exact opposite. People want some reprieve from the Russian aggression, some sort of protection and security guarantees, which Ukraine also tried to get from the West. Ukrainian leadership signed the infamous Budapest Memorandum between the U.S., the U.K., and Russia that was supposed to protect Ukrainian sovereignty and borders.
And when was that?
That was in 1992.
Yeah, this is a very important thing, I think, to talk about. I think people have ignored this, but go ahead.
Yes, yeah. So the kind of protection that we were supposed to get did not work out. We did not get protected. It's one of the signers of the memorandum was Russia, the country that never intended to keep our sovereignty intact or our borders safe. So that's why Finland and Norway have joined NATO a couple of years ago, because everybody's worried. Europe is very worried. And, people who like traveling to Europe, please remember that your enjoyment of Europe is only guaranteed as long as Europe is independent and not under the Russian boot. So Ukraine is serving an incredibly important historical mission of protecting Europe at the cost of the lives of our own men, women, and children. And I think that Ukraine should get more assistance. It's definitely in Europe's interest to continue keeping the shield between them and Russia, because Russians have openly spoken about taking back Berlin, and walking through Paris in their military boots for forever. They've put images of exploding nuclear weapons on Russian TV saying, we can do it, no one can stop us. So that's the kind of country we're dealing with. And Ukrainians are standing up to them because we literally have no other choice. Because what the Russians do when they enter a Ukrainian town or Ukrainian area, I don't want to upset our listeners too much, but the atrocities that they commit are horrific and medieval in their nature. Mm. You can't even imagine that a modern country would behave this way. We also cannot forget that they have abducted 20,000 Ukrainian children, if not more. So that is also part of the effort to erase the Ukrainian existence of Ukrainian identity, is to re-educate the children, steal them, re-educate them, and send them back to wage war on their own country. So these things are very get serious. Also, an important thing that I want to bring up is that the way that a democratic world deals with this invasion has momentous consequences for the world order, which is already shaking and doesn't appear very safe at the moment. Because if Russia is allowed to do whatever they want in Ukraine and take away the land and kill the people with impunity, then who is to stop other countries from invading their weaker neighbors and then going to war on each other?
And I think we're seeing that everywhere. I just want to take a moment to tell our listeners that you're listening to Changing the Narrative. I'm Dina Eccles, and my guest today is Natalka Akulenko, and we're talking about Ukraine. We're talking about the love that Ukrainian people have for their independence and their culture, and just taking a closer look besides the headlines that we hear and some of the lies that we hear about Ukraine. Yeah, the thing you were talking about before we just took this break was about the children being taken and re-educated. You know, this is an old playbook, taking the Native American children and trying to deprogram them. It doesn't work. It, you know, it may work to a point, but I think what we've seen over and over and over again is the resilience of a people. And that would be my hope for Ukraine, that those children will come home again and remember who they are, remember their roots. Is there anything else about that you'd like to talk about? Is there, I don't know.
Russia is a militaristic country that has no other underlying idea, you know, there are no ideals that steer them in some direction. So their autocratic president is obsessed with putting the Soviet Union back together, which I can tell you was not a good place for most people to live. A ruthless authoritarian rule. Ukrainians don't want to live in it and also probably won't survive it. So if Russia were allowed to continue and take over Ukraine or parts of Ukraine, you know what they found in the cities that were liberated by Ukrainian army? Torture chambers with children.
Oh, Jesus.
So no one is safe. No one is safe. Grandparents, babies, no one is safe. Russians act extremely cruelly toward people they invade. So please don't let this happen to Ukrainians, because if Ukraine falls, this will start happening to other people.
Right.
The Baltic countries are very worried now. And I really hope that the fact that they joined NATO all those years ago will actually help in their defense. We'll see, I guess. But the wisest, the smartest thing for the world to do is to continue supporting Ukraine in both material needs and also emotional support.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very, very important, because it seems like I almost think in terms of people being non-human. I don't think, you know, it's like, I know there are people in Russia who are pro-peace. I know it. And yet their voices are stifled.
Not just stifled. Most of those people don't live in Russia anymore.
Yeah, there's that. There's that.
None of my Russian friends live in Russia anymore. Mm. They live somewhere else. Because the choice is between being killed or being in the gulag.
Right.
They imprison teenagers. There's a girl, I can't remember her name, but a girl in Russia who was put to prison for 15 years for donating like $50 to a Ukrainian organization.
So there's a lot that we need to kind of reconsider and help support. And again, I just want to mention to people that we've talked about your website, Friends of Ukraine, Madison Inc., and also it's on Facebook. And there's so much good information, you know, going there. Like I learned of a U.S. Congressman, Brian Fitzpatrick. He's pro-Ukrainian. He's Republican from Pennsylvania. I thought that was very interesting that he actually was visiting Ukrainian troops recently. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so, because a lot of times we hear, well, the Republicans are all, you know, they want to back away from supporting Ukraine. But, there, you know, there's a lot of people who are understanding the things that you're talking about. And we need to support them.
I heard that, you know, the majority of Americans on every political side are for Ukraine, mm-hmm. the majority, mm-hmm. 80%.
Well, America doesn't, you know, historically, mm-hmm. we have been on the side of, the of you know, non-invaders. We want to be in support of the people who've been harmed. This is, you know, we yeah. champion that. So for all of a sudden to have it flip and we're like palsy-wowsy with the invaders, I don't get it. I don't get it. And
so
that's why...
The world needs yeah. the U.S. The U.S. is a benevolent force that can keep other countries under its nuclear umbrella. It can exert soft power, like through the USAID, you know, feeding starving people,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Preventing or easing the AIDS epidemic. So we need America to continue doing the good things that it has done for yeah. a long time.
So and really, there's something for every one of us to, yes, there's something for every mm-hmm. one of us to take and do. You know, to learn about mm-hmm. and speak about, if nothing else, you know, share this podcast with people so that they can hear. Some of the other things that I've seen on your, another thing I saw on your Facebook page were people sending medical supplies.
Yes, we recently met a person who is doing it on his own volition and looking for his own resources. That is incredibly helpful and kind and courageous and generous.
Right.
And it blows my mind that there's so many Americans,
mm-hmm.
you know, who have no connection to Ukraine. They just see that this is the right thing to do to support a young democracy that is struggling against an overwhelming odds. And, you know, you don't have to go to war. You don't have to put boots on the ground. You can call your representatives, you can collect some supplies or donate money to organizations that are already doing that, humanitarian medical supplies, supporting. The Ukraine has millions of internally displaced people because of, you know, the 20% of the country that's being bombarded out of existence. And so many refugees. The World Central Kitchen is always in Ukraine, always feeding people. You know, there's international volunteers helping to dig people from under the rubble after bombardments and feeding people and bringing warm jackets and coats. We have an organization here in Madison who has done so much for the Ukrainian orphanages. And I want to give a shout out to World Orphan Fund. And Wisconsin Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's World Orphan Fund?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Very good work. And the gentleman who provides medical supplies to Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians in Appleton and Green Bay, Milwaukee, all of us are doing our little part to help. And I'm incredibly grateful to those mm-hmm. of any nationality or political conviction who are actively helpful and friendly.
Mm, right. This is what we need. I mean, we can't wait. People shouldn't be waiting for the government to do the right thing. We have mm-hmm. the opportunity. And again, that's why I keep pointing to your website or the Facebook page, because if you want to, you know, find out, learn for yourself, learn, and then find ways to participate. This is peacemaking. This is peace building, and it's a good thing to do.
And Ukrainians are super nice, you guys. If you just come and meet us, you'll see. We like to feed you. You know, we like to show you around. We are very we're cool. Please be our friend.
Mm-hmm. Great. And this is my experience. Okay, so now we come to this thing that might be happening where the threat is there that Ukrainians who are in this country may be deported. Can you address that?
I can only address that in an emotional way because I don't really have any power to stop or change it. But I would like to plead with the people to call their reps, whether they're Republican or Democrat or Independent, and please, please ask them to not do that. Because, like I said, literally part of the country is non-existent. It looks like Dresden after the Allied bombardment in 1944, you know? So don't send people back there. They can be useful here. People want to work. Ukrainians are very hardworking. You'll see Ukrainians working in construction and everywhere in Europe. You know, Ukrainians are very hardworking people, and many of them are young, many of them are old, and they should not go have to go back where there are bombs falling on their buildings every night. Every night there is another school or residential block destroyed, you know, with kids and adults and everybody suffering, and pets and animals. So Ukrainians who are here, I wish for them to have the peace of knowing that they can stay here as long as the war is going on, so they can continue with their lives and do good for this country and for their own country. Ukrainians are not enemies. Ukrainians are peaceful and hardworking people.
That's beautifully stated. And it, again, it's something that people can do. You know, when you're calling your representatives, which hopefully you're all doing many times a day lately, and say that. And it, this is another way to protect the cultural heritage of Ukraine. Letting them stay, they work in their communities and keep advancing who they are. You know, as you said, Natalka, they're peaceful people. They're willing to work. They're in a very... Go ahead.
Because life is currently impossible in many parts of Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, people keep going, their restaurants and, you know, music, but really, if you have small children, imagine listening to sirens every single day, every single night. So why would you send people back to them?
Yeah, right. Well, and this is an issue that we're dealing with in the United States on many fronts right now, unfortunately. So, yeah, the call out is to our humanity. The call out is that we know how we would like to live and how we would like to be treated, and to extend that to people, because we can. You know, we do have the means. Of course, if we keep dumping $70 million planes off of cruisers in the ocean, I don't know if you've heard about that, you know, all the money that we spend in the military, if we could just start to divert some of that, we wouldn't even, there would be no question of what we could do. But,
you know, as many of the listeners probably know, the money that the U.S. spent so far helping Ukraine, the vast majority, like 90% of it, stays in the States. It pays for jobs here, for production costs. It does not go to Ukraine. So it's totally zero-sum situation. Everybody wins. Except for Putin. He loses, but he deserves
it. I love your honesty, and thank you for the facts, because, again, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today talking. How else can people help? How else? What else do you see happening?
I think that speaking out, speaking to your friends and relatives, calling your representative is really what we can do. Please donate money if you can, even a little bit. There's an organization called Together for United for Ukraine, or in Ukrainian Razom, RAZOM. They ship a lot of medical supplies to Ukraine. You can donate to them. Wisconsin Ukrainians, which is not my group, it's a different group, they also provide shipments to Ukraine. So, you know, find a group that you trust and give them a little bit of money, or go to a Ukrainian cafe and eat there, you know, and people working in the kitchen will probably be Ukrainians. So you can say, we're here for you guys, we see you.
Mm.
You know?
What was the first group you mentioned? Make sure people heard.
United for Ukraine.
United for Ukraine, okay.
It's a Washington, D.C. group that started after the first invasion of Crimea in 2014. So they've been around for a while, and they're a good group.
Excellent. So I see also you have a concert coming up, a fundraising concert on August 12th. Do you know about
it?
No. Okay. Then.
Is it Kamuna Lux?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they're awesome. We had them at our picnic last year. They're fantastic.
Okay.
So, yes.
I listened to them last night, and it was like, wow, this is great music. We're going to have to go. But now I might want to have to be back there for the 17th as well for your other celebration. So we'll see. It's a couple of hours
and
drive.
At Ukrainian Fest, we're going to have a really fun band from Minneapolis. So they're Ukrainian-Americans. And similar music, you know, they... Mm-hmm. Much based on the Ukrainian folk and like village wedding type, boisterous, loud, fun tunes, really good for dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So I really look forward to it.
Yeah,
I love dancing.
Yeah, I love the sounds. When I was young, my mother got us involved with a cultural group, dancing group, and musical group, and so we played music from all over Europe, really.
Nice.
It was fun. And danced. It was so much fun. So, yeah, I still have that interest and
you
love.
Play an instrument?
I don't know, no.
No. Not me neither.
But I try my best at singing, and I definitely still dance, so.
Fantastic. Well, I'll see you there, then we'll dance.
I'll definitely dance, yes. So I'd just like to let everyone know that... you're listening to Changing the Narrative, and I'm Dina Eccles, and my guest is Natalka Akalenko, and she's a Ukrainian-American and very well-versed in everything that's happening, and I'm thrilled to have her today talking about Ukraine and the support of Ukraine and how we can come back to a humanistic approach to ending the violence there and not just allow Putin to overrun the country, the independence of the Ukrainian people.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've done a really great job talking about that today. Is there anything else that you really want people to know about?
Yes, I think that I would really like to, again, make the point that Ukrainians are people who love food and love other people and love work, love growing bread and raising animals, who are extremely selfless when they have to be, and also they are centered on community and family and comfort when they can afford to be. And we welcome other points of view. What we don't welcome is aggression invasions and deprivation of our rights, because we have rights, we're very proud of them, and we love the land, we love the people. Please join us and be our friends.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's a simple request. It's heartfelt. And I hear you. I hear you. And I want to be that friend. And I know more people can follow that lead, because we all need that now. We need to come together. We need to support one another in our independence and in our uniqueness and in our humanity. So I want to make sure that we play the song of that you sent me, and you're going to have to pronounce it for me. Dhaka...
Yes, by the way, Dhaka Brasa.
Yes.
Many people in Wisconsin have seen them in Madison. They've played here many times. In fact, Wisconsin and Madison were the first players in the U.S. where they came to play many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They're world famous and incredibly beautiful, evocative music. It's an experience. And they're coming to Madison in November. They're going to be playing at Atwood Music Hall in Madison.
In November?
So yes.
Okay, I'll be there. This is an incredible piece. I thank you for sharing it with me, and now we get to share it with all the listeners as we go on.
Thank you so much for letting me talk to your listeners. I want to say hi to everyone from the Ukrainian community in Madison and the Ukrainians in Ukraine.
Thank you. And hello back. And now we're going to listen to this beautiful piece. And it's called Springtime. How do you say it in Ukrainian?
Vesna.
Well, you can say something also so you can hear your language.
Дуже дякую тобі, Діно, за те, що ти мене запросила. Я дуже пишаюся нашою дружбою, і я хочу, щоб всі американці любили Україну так, як ми її любимо. I said, thank you, Dina. I'm proud of our friendship, and I would like Americans to be as fond of Ukraine as we are.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it. Thank you so much. Have a really wonderful day, Natalka. Keep doing all the wonderful things you're doing for your people, for all of us, really. And thank you to the listeners, and please enjoy this music.